Your source for everything paranormal. Para-X. The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Blessed be, heed the words I call to thee. Honor the old ones in name and deed, hearken not to others' greed. Pray to the moon when she is round, luck with you shall then abound. Respect the earth, the sky, the sea, as you will it, so mote it be. Welcome to Stirring the Cauldron on the Para-X Radio Network. And now, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
Hi, Merry Meet, and welcome to Stirring the Cauldron. The opening music was called Call to Adventure, and my special guest tonight, Felix Silla, has been called to a great many adventures, not only in real life, but also in his life on television and in the movies. And while he's most famous for being Cousin It on the original Addams Family TV show, you've seen him in a lot of roles, maybe some that you didn't even recognize because he was the man behind the costume. For example, Felix was Tweaky in the TV show Buck Rogers in the 25th Century. He was an Ewok in Return of the Jedi. Litvak, a maniacal miniature Hitler who menaces George Siegel in The Blackbird. He was Emperor Penguin in Batman Returns, a leprechaun on Bonanza, a troll and a goblin on Bewitched. And I think I'd better bring Felix on now, because if I listed all of his credits, we'd run out of time before he could say a word. So, Felix, welcome to the show, and thank you for joining me tonight.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad you stopped talking about me, because I know you were running out of time.
I was running out of breath.
Yeah, what I've done. I mean, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Well, I'm so glad that you're here. And, you know, before we go any further, I want to tell everyone in the chat room that if you have a question for Felix, please send it to me in a private message. And if you're not in the chat room and listening and have a question, you can pop over to paraxradionetwork.com and click on the chat link, and here you will be. So let's kind of start, maybe not at quite the beginning, but kind of in the beginning. I know you were born in Italy, and you trained as a circus performer. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I came from Italy when I was 15 or 16 years old, 1955. I arrived in New York. I think it was November 24th, the day before Thanksgiving, and it was freezing cold. And so around April, I told my brother, see, I have a brother upstate in New York. I told him, I said, Mike, I really don't like here. I want to go back home. Because, you know, I didn't understand the language. I didn't even know one word of English. And every time we went to visit friends, I just sat in the corner someplace, just listened to people talking. I know they were speaking in English, but they were Italian people. So I told them, I said, look, I don't like it. First, it's too cold, and then I want to go back home. So in April, 1956, he took me to New York City to see Ringling Brothers and Barnum & Bailey Circus. And I got a job. They gave me a job. I was like, you know, working on the show as a clown. And then I went to work with a group from Italy. They did a bareback riding, you know, a horse act. And I joined the group, and I went with them. And then in 1962, well, I traveled with the circus for about 6-7 years. Wow. Then in 1962, I decided we were in L.A., Los Angeles. We were working at the sports arena, and I decided, I said, well, I've seen everywhere. I've seen a little town, a big city, and everything. But, you know, from east to west and north to south. I don't want a circus anymore. I want to, you know, just give up. So I went to work with a group, a family that they did publicity when the circus came to town in Los Angeles. So the way I started out in the movie industry, a gentleman came over and they said, you know what? They're looking for little people to do some stunt work. And at that time, I didn't have a car because when you travel with the circus, you don't need a car. We used to travel by trains.
Yeah.
So, I didn't have a car. So a friend of mine that drove me to MGM Studio in Culver City, and they hired me as a little guy to dub a little boy on the movie, the first movie, the Carolyn Jones, Shirley Jones, Gig Young, Red Buttons, and all this. It was a wonderful thing. And my job was doubling this little boy. Gig Young was telling this little boy, said, someday we're going to go to the moon, and this is how we're going to do it. So what he did, he put a harness on this little boy, and then he put a bunch of helium balloons, and he's flying in the backyard of his mama's house, and he showed him how to fly, and he's hopping everywhere. So he tied a rope on a picket fence, and he went inside because he went falling in love with his mother. He went in and talked to his mother, and in the meantime, the little boy cut the rope, and he's flying away, and that was me. So, yes, that's how my first movie. They used to hang me on a crane 110 feet off the ground. They fly me all over Culver City. And then one day we were filming over a golf course. And I'm hanging there, and I'm looking down. I saw everybody walking away. I'm looking down and says, what are they going? I said, hey, guys, where are you guys going? We are going to lunch. I said, what about me? Oh, I'm sorry, we forgot. We're going to let you down. And so that's my first experience with movie industry, doing stunt work 110 feet off the ground.
Oh, my God, and being forgotten, too.
Yes, I mean, just forget all about it. So they didn't even know I was up there. So anyway, and then Adam's Family came, and I had a lot of fun to work with the Adam's Family. What a wonderful people, you know, like Carolyn Jones and John Astin, the old man,
Jackie Coogan,
the grandma, Ted Cassidy. What a wonderful group of people. I mean, they were profession. I mean, a lot of, that was done, you know, those days, we're never going to see them again because everything was done perfect. It had to be done perfect. No mistakes, nothing like that. Yeah. So I really enjoyed work with that group. And it was like a family to me.
It was. And, you know, I was talking about adventure earlier on. And I mean, you had so many things that people would think that you lived a really charmed life. And in some ways you have. But it's also been a lot of hard work as well. Okay, so let's take Cousin It, for example. The one, you know, you're most famous for him. But I'm sure that the lighting on the set made the stage uncomfortably warm at times. And it must have been hell working in the costume. And I do have a question from chat room about that. And they said, aside from the costume being heavy and hard to move around in, and you probably had some limited vision, too, with all that hair. Did they give you anything underneath the costume to keep you cool while you were wearing it?
There's no such a thing to keep cool. Those days, we didn't have anything. What I wore underneath was black pants, black shirt with long sleeves, and black gloves. The costume was very hot in the beginning because when we started out, see, I came in on the show around 16 or 17 episode before, you know, after they started. Yeah. When I came in, they had a real human hair that I wore, and it was heavy, it was hot, and very, very heavy and hot. And I could not stand it. I mean, as soon as I put that thing on top of my head, it felt like 10 pounds of bricks that I had on top of my head. So they decided to go to synthetic material because the real wigs were kind of flammable, you know, very flammable. And the director got this idea. He said, you know what? Felix, when he's dressed, he's like a mop. You know, when he walks on the floor, he can wipe, you know, clean the floor. And that's exactly what it was. Yeah. So he said, when these guys, like the crew people, they do smoke cigarettes on the set, and they walk around the set, they go get a cup of coffee, and they throw the cigarette on the floor, and they step on it. Sometimes they miss it. And the director said, can you imagine if a Felix goes right by, and he goes up in flame? And that's why they became, they used the synthetic material, and it was a lot lighter, and it's beautiful, but anything to keep me cool? No, there was nothing available because those days we didn't have anything they have now. So it was a very, very light in the second unit. I mean, the second costume, it was a lot lighter than the first one.
Well, how long did you, in intervals, how long were you in the costume before you could at least pull off the head or whatever and get some air?
Well, it depends on the scene. Sometimes like 15, 20 minutes. I could stand maybe longer than half an hour. It wasn't really, the second costume wasn't really that bad. I mean, it was very light, and it could breathe a lot better than the first one. The first one, I mean, it became like humid. It's like humidity, and you start sweating. Yeah, it was terrible. It was terrible. The second one, I could stay in there for 15, 20 minutes, half an hour if I had to, you know.
So yeah. Did you get hazard pay for that? It's terrible.
Oh, my God. I believe the dog was making more money than I did. You know, we had a sheep dog one time on the show, and he has the glasses on just like I have.
Oh, I remember that, yeah.
There's a picture that I sell. It's me and the dog next to me. He's got a sunglass, and I got sunglasses. I think he was making more than I did, but he only worked 1 week. You know, those days, I mean, compared what the money was, like a pack cigarette was, for 20 cents, or a gallon of gas was 24 cents. I mean, I was making like $500 a week, and it paid some of the bills, you know?
Right, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it did pay the bills, so.
For back then. And I think, though, I heard you, I was listening to a couple of interviews that you've done over the years. And, you know, here in this day and age, people know that people go on TV, they have residuals and blah, blah, blah. But I heard you say on one of the interviews that residuals didn't last very long, and they didn't in general. I think, you know, how did that work?
Well, the residual, okay. The residual goes, they go in, they start somewhere up, then they go lower, lower, lower until nothing. The Adams family, they sent me a note, 1990, something like that. And he said, oh, we sent you a note, and he said, in 1992 or 93, we will give you some IOU or whatever. I waited and waited. That year went right by, and nothing came, you know. We didn't really get a lot of residual. So some of the, you know what, I got residual like the other, about a week ago, I got a residual from Disney Studio. My amount was 0.01.
You got a whole penny.
Oh, yes. Well, not even a penny. Not even a penny, because it's 0.01, right?
Yeah.
So what is that?
I could tell you, but I wouldn't be talking nice language if I did.
you know, Marla, there's a bar in Studio City, California. Mm-hmm. If you have a check less than a dollar, you go over there, they copy it, they put it on the wall, and they give you a free drink. You know how many checks I have like that, like one penny, two pennies? I got so many of them. Yeah. And you know what? I don't cash them because, well, I don't want to, I shouldn't say this, but I'm going to. I just don't like to ruin that accounting, because at the end of the year, when the income tax comes, he says, what did we do with that check that we sent somebody 0.01? You know, they want to know. Mm-hmm. It costs so much money to send it to you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it costs more to mail it than what the check is worth, or it's even like the check. It's silly.
I know. Oh, my God. But they have to send it to you. It's, I don't know. They have to send it to you. Yeah.
It's legal. I mean, some places I know will not send you a residual or royalty check unless you make a certain amount of money, like $50. They'll wait until it accumulates. But
That's what I said. Yeah.
Yeah, but I got a royalty check on a book one time for 5 cents.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, well, that was 35, 40 cents to send it by just a stamp. And and I'm thinking, why bother? You know, I mean, it's not that I was going to miss the 5 cents. So,
now it's 50 cents to send it. I know. It's crazy. Yeah. Well, you know what? They have to give it to you.
They give it to you, all right.
Yeah, they give it to you. Well, see, right now, you know what? 1964, I think the Adams family was 64, 66. Right now, can you imagine what it was like? It's over. Buck Rogers, 40 years this year, the 40th anniversary. Adams family's got to be longer. That's at least 55 years.
Yeah.
So I never thought that, talking to you right now, I never thought about 40, 50 years later, we'd be talking about the Adams family, Buck Rogers, whatever. You know, Buck Rogers and Adams family has such follower, you know. And every time I go to a convention, everybody says, oh, I grew up with Buck Rogers. I grew up with the Adams family. And I said, I had never grew up with him with anything. You know, I don't remember. Some of the people that keep saying to me, oh, you done this, you did this, you did that. I say, wait a minute, where do you get this from? Some of these fans, they know more about me than I know myself.
Yes.
You know, I can't understand. They do a lot of research.
They do
a lot of research, yes.
And I did a little research because I found out something that I didn't know. That Cousin It was not an original character in the Charles Adams comic, but it was introduced by the show's producer, David Levy.
That's right.
And you know, at the time, was Cousin It intended to be a regular on the show, or did it start as kind of a one-time spot and the popularity of the character made him a recurring character?
Well, okay, that I don't know. I went on an interview when this thing that my agent sent me in, Las Palmas in Hollywood.
Yeah.
And there's the studio used to call the, what was it called? Anyway.
It was General Service.
Yeah.
I lived about a block away from there for the first 20, 30 years of my life.
Really?
Yeah.
So anyway, we used to go to the unemployment office there somewhere
right
over
the street.
Santa Monica,
right up the street from there, yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, on Friday, my agent sent me into this office, and he said, oh, they want to go see this. They want to see you about an interview. And I walked in the office, and there were two gentlemen sitting at the table next to each other, talking to each other. And I came in, and they look at me, and I said, oh, hi, Felix, how are you? Good evening. And it's just, they look at each other, and they say, well, that's it. Come back Monday, you got the job. And I said, okay. So that's it. I mean, they didn't tell me, they didn't say anything to me, like, what am I supposed to be doing, you know? Mm-hmm. He says, come back Monday at 7 o'clock. So I got back on Monday at the studio at 7 o'clock, and they put me a wig on top of my head, a pair of sunglasses, and this and that, and there it was. So you're right about, doesn't it, was not on Charles Adams' character, cartoon. It was done, developed by David Levine, which was a wonderful, wonderful gentleman. Really, really nice guy. And they never told me, but they, every week, you know, they used me all the time. I went through from the, not from the beginning, because they already did about 17 or 18 episodes, from there until the end. I only missed two episodes, I think, because I had to do, I was working on a movie, The Russians Are Coming. Oh. So I had to give this job to a friend of mine. That and then when I came back, they gave me my job back. Also, I played on Cousin It on the TV show they were going to redo, the live show in which nothing happened to it. They videotaped. It didn't really go very well. It wasn't that well done, and it was taped, and then nothing happened to it. So they were going to bring him back in color, in which I don't think in color would look good. It looks a lot better in black and white.
It did. It had a certain class to it. So, actually, you filmed that at General Service? Adam's Family?
General Service.
I'll be darned. I didn't know. And I used to go by there past to get to school every day and stuff.
Yeah.
I used to see Mr. Ed being driven in onto the lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I used to see George Burns every day drive in to his office. But I didn't know that the Addams Family was there. See, I learned something else from you today. This is good.
Yes, Addams Family was filmed there. Mr. Ed, I think, was filmed there. We used to go and visit each other. You know, when we're not involved in, you know, on the show, on the scene, or whatever. We just go across the next stage and say hello to the other guys, and they did the same thing. You know, they came and said hello to us, and one day, somebody came and came over to set and visit, and I was sitting. They made this little tiny chair, director chair, and I'm sitting all fully dressed. And the director called me, so, hey, Felix, we need you on the set, so can you come over? So I got up, walked away, and go toward the camera, and I heard somebody said, "There it goes, Frankie Lane toupee." So I didn't say anything. I went to on the set where the camera was. We filmed whatever we had to film. And then I asked after we cut, I asked somebody, says, who was that? Says, there goes Frankie Lane and toupee. Bob Hope came over on a set and visit. Mm-hmm. And he made a joke about, he saw me walking, and he said, there goes Frankie Lane and toupee. There was all Bob Hope. So...
Oh my God!
But we had, you know what, we did have a lot of fun. Adam's Family, it was a family, just like a family to me. And everybody got along so well. You know, we were really had a lot of fun. Yeah.
I just got another question from the chat room.
Yeah.
They want to know what language Cousin It was speaking.
Well, I think it was between English, Italian, and Chinese. I don't know. I have no idea. I have no. You know what, Marla? 30 years later, I met the gentleman that did my voice.
Wow.
I went to, I had a friend of mine. She had to go to pick up something, some church in the valley, in San Fernando Valley. So I drove her over there, and it was in the church. We went inside the door, the main door, and it was a huge, long table. They were giving away some whatever. And this gentleman with the beard, gray hair, he looked at me. As soon as I came into the door, he points at me and he says, Cousin It. I says, how do you know? He said, well, I did your voice 30 years ago. Oh. And it was the name, but his name is Tony Magro, and he used to work on the sound department And he's the one that did my voice.
Mm.
He did the voice for Cousin It.
Wow.
And then he, yeah.
No, I was just going to say that he was such an iconic. I mean, he was such one of the favorite characters on the whole show.
A lot of people say, well, they loved the Cousin It and the Addams Family. And you know what? Even Carolyn Jones did my voice a couple of times.
Wow.
Yes, yes. So I don't know how they did that, but a lot of people ask me, how did they do that? I said, you know what? I don't know anything about it. I just did my work. I went to work. I put the crazy thing on top of my head, and I went home. I don't know what happened. Now the sound, I mean, they do that later.
Yeah,
the sound is not done. Yeah, it's right. Done later. So,
well, the cutest clip that I saw, I was looking at YouTube one day, and it was you and Richard Deacon, Cousin It and Deacon. That was a priceless clip because, you know, I think Carolyn Jones or Morticia in the beginning said, you just have to get used to his accent or something. And
right.
Then Deacon says something to you, blah, 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 you know, and
yes, yes.
It was a beautiful clip. It really was.
It's a very, very funny. Yes, you're absolutely right. I think I have that on my website or whatever. I don't know, but I agree with you. It was beautiful. Yes, yeah.
And he did it. Well, Richard Deacon was a great character actor.
Oh my God! Yes, yes. He was such a nice guy. You know what? We all had a wonderful people appearing every week. You know, they were great people. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Are we going to move to something else? We got so much to talk about Adam's family.
Do. Yeah, we really do. But let's switch over just a little bit. I got one more question, and I think then we're going to go to break for a couple of minutes.
Oh, okay.
But as I mentioned before, you were Tweaky in Tweaky the Robot and Buck Rogers in the 25th Century. Now, was that costume, this is a question from Chad, it came. Was that costume cooler and less cumbersome than the hair suit? And did it take a long time to get the Tweaky costume on because it looked like it had so many parts?
Well, okay, the answer is to this, it was nothing, it wasn't really that hot. Mm-hmm. Those days we don't have like a little fan like they do now, the cool costume, cool suit, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It took a little while to put it on because it was in seven different pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yeah.
And I didn't have a lot of problem with it. I could run and things like that. The only problem I was having with it, I could not climb stairs. I could not climb because I could not bend my knees because the skirt around my waist, it was below my knees, so I could not bend up and down. I had no idea. I couldn't go up and down stairs. So Gil Gerard, in which he's the one who played Buck Rogers, he had to pick me up every time we were running, get chased. He had to pick me up and put me on the ship or whatever, and he used to say to me, Felix, you get heavy. And I said to him, you know how many times I said the F word? So many times, like, Gil, you, whatever. You know, he had to pick, but it wasn't really that bad. The only time we had a problem was when I came in, when Dr. Ewer introduced me to Buck Rogers. Remember, he sat down at the table, and I think I brought in a glass of wine or whatever. I came into the set, and the director said, okay, Felix, there's two marks. You come in, and you stop on the first mark, and then from there you go to the next mark, which was in front of Gil Gerard, Buck Rogers. So, okay, so I got in, and I says, okay, Felix, go to the next mark. I say, sorry, but I can't. He said, why not? He said, I can't see. I was sweating so I was sweating so much that I had to close my eyes because they were burning with sweat, and I couldn't keep my eyes open. So he said to me, what's happening? I said, I'm sorry, you know, I can't see. So they cut, and they took my mask off. They put the one of those the tennis, or whatever they call it, in my forehead. Mm-hmm. And after that, everything was fine. So they only had one problem. That was the only problem that I had with it. But it was not, it wasn't really that hot. You know, it wasn't really that, I mean, you know what? Somebody's got to do it, you know? Somebody's got to do it. And, I was the one that had to do it because I was picked by a bunch of other people that you know, they like me better, whatever, and I did. And then when we started work, you know, when we started with Buck Rogers, Tweaky, I asked the director, says, you know what? What do you want me to do? I mean, I don't know, you know. He said, don't do anything crazy. He said, just walk natural, and that's all we want. You know, and then they did the dialogue. I had to follow the cue from the script lady, in which she, you know, she read my whatever. And then after the show was filmed, Mel Blanc came in front of the theater, in front of a screen. They showed the film, and he put the voice in. Mel Blanc, mm-hmm. one of the best.
Oh, yeah. Yes, absolutely. And you can tell, if people know Mel Blanc and all his voices, you can hear that it's him. It's wonderful,
yeah.
You know,
because
he has a very distinct, even though Bugs Bunny does not sound like Porky Pig or anything like that, when he speaks in certain characters, you can really tell it's him. He was a very talented man, very talented.
He was the best. I don't think you'll find anyone better than him. You know, it's too bad that he... I only met him once. He came at Universal Studio on the set, and we had a picture taken together. I wish I had it, but I don't have it. And I met him the first and last time, and then he had a terrible car accident.
Yes.
And then he passed. He passed away.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. He's so well remembered that he's buried over in Hollywood at Hollywood Forever Cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he was Jewish, and in the Jewish tradition, you put pennies on the grave.
And oh, really?
Every time you go to Hollywood Forever, he's got pennies all over the tombstone in the grave. I mean, people still remember him, and they respect him that way. So, yeah.
I mean, how can you forget this guy? How can you forget it? One of the best. I mean, you'd never find anybody better, you know?
No.
It was the best, you know.
Man of a thousand voices. That's what it says on his tombstone. Mel Blanc, man of a thousand voices.
And right.
They're not far from wrong. All right. We're going to take a quick 2-minute break. And so we'll be right back, everybody. Hang on.
All right.
Don't go away. There's more Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks right after these important messages.
Are you haunted by shadow people in the middle of the night?
Do you secretly love all things creepy and spooky? Enjoy ghost stories and horror fiction from the best storytellers?
Do you have a true ghost experience you want to share, but no one will believe you?
If yes, listen to The Professionals on What Are You Afraid Of? Horror Paranormal Show, Friday nights at 9 p.m. on Para X Radio and at www.whatareyouafraidofpodcast.com.
What are you afraid of on Para X?
Our creepy and demented hosts are on call to provide you with all your spooky needs with true ghost stories, interviews, indie music, and new horror fiction. We are ready to scare you.
Para X.
From Haunted Road Media comes an exciting new novel by author Marla Brooks. Soul Connection, a deadly obsession. Two lost souls, ripped apart by murder in another century, find each other again in the present, only to discover that the murderer has followed them through time. Can their love save them, or will history repeat itself? Find out in this captivating new novel by Marla Brooks, Soul Connection, A Deadly Obsession. Available now on Amazon.com and at BarnesandNoble.com.
Demons. Vampires. Werewolves. Skin. All of this and more, Sunday nights at midnight, on the Staring Into the Abyss radio show. Come, get lost with us.
Welcome back to Stirring the Cauldron. Once again, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
And as the man said, welcome back. And I'm here with Felix Silla, who you know as Cousin It from the Addams Family, and Tweaky from Buck Rogers and a million other things. And Felix, you know, you've played so many iconic characters and appeared on shows like The Monkees and Matt Houston and Dukes of Hazzard and Sonny and Cher, and movies like Planet of the Apes and Poltergeist and Indiana Jones and Temple of Doom and E.T. Mm-hmm.
Let's Star Wars.
And Star Wars, yes.
Yeah, let's don't forget Star Wars, yeah.
You were an Ewok, yes.
Yes.
I heard you say this the other day, you were a flying Ewok, or what was it?
Yes, I was the one throwing rocks at the stormtrooper. Yes, I was the flying Ewok. And we had a lot of fun working on that show. George Lucas is a very nice guy and a wonderful man, and I got to meet a lot of nice people from England, a lot of old people, like Kenny Baker. To work with Kenny. I got to work with Carrie Fisher, may rest in peace. What's his name? Peter Mayhew, Chewbacca, Harrison Ford. I worked with Harrison Ford before Star Wars on the... was that before or after? And a movie called Indiana Jones: The Temple of Dooms. I was on a movie 6 months. We travel everywhere. We went everywhere. You know, a friend of mine called me from Hong Kong early in the morning, and at that time I was living in L.A., San Fernando Valley, California. Mm-hmm. He called me up like at 3 or 4 in the morning. He said, "Hey, Felix, how's your passport?" I said, "Yeah, what's going on?" He said, "Oh, are your passport okay?" I said, "Yeah, it is. What do you want to do?" "Oh, I need you to come to Hong Kong for a movie." I said, "Okay, mm-hmm. when?" You know, so get you, send me a ticket, and you know, better me ticket, a 747 Pan Am, a beautiful airplane, you know, first class. And I arrived in Hong Kong, and then from there we went to India. From India, went to London. Oh. From London to California, California back to London. But anyway, I'm talking about Indiana Jones now. We did a lot of scenes because Harrison Ford got hurt. He hurt himself doing some exercise by body by Jake, and he was there. He tried to make everybody do an exercise or could lose weight or keep himself in shape. So he hurt himself. So we came back to California to do the water scene up in near Sacramento, Tuolumne River, and I got stuck under the raft. I almost drowned. You know, I told the guy, "You know what? I don't swim." I said to the guy, "You know what? I don't swim." And the guy says, "Oh, don't worry about it. We're going to put this life vest on you. Don't panic. If anything happened, you just pull on this string, you know, and say nothing else. Don't worry about it." Okay, so we do the scene, and the raft flipped over. The other two people jumped out or fell off, and I'm stuck underneath. Oh, and I didn't know what to do. You know, I didn't know what to do. I was underneath the raft and a pocket of hair. And I was underneath. The only thing I could see, yellow thing on top of my head, and I couldn't figure out, should I let it go or not? So I hung on in the rope. And the guy said to me, "You know what? I was pulling on your leg, and you didn't want to let it go." I said, "Yeah, really? Pulling my legs, and why did it take you so long to get me out?" So anyway, Steven Spielberg found out, he was in London that time, he found out what happened, and he called and he says, "Do not let Felix do any more water work because I need him to finish the film." You know, because there was plenty more to do. I had to go back to London. Yeah. But anyway, that cost, Indiana Jones, but Star Wars was wonderful. And then I was a Talosian on the pilot of Star Trek.
Really?
I got to work with Jeffrey Hunter.
Oh.
And the pilot, the cage.
Yeah,
the
he
cage.
Was the original captain in that.
That's right. And then, you know what, his wife told him, she said to him, "Don't do the show because it's not going anywhere." And the poor guy, then he died early. You know, I think it was, 45 years old? He died, but she said to him, "Oh, yeah, you don't want to do the show. This show's not going anywhere." Can you imagine that?
Yes.
What a wonderful actor he was. I mean, he was a very talented actor, and I really enjoyed to work with him. And then I tell people I got to work with Moses.
I was going to ask you about that. I saw that, and I was ready to bow and kneel in front of you and kiss your ring. Tell us about that.
You know what? I keep telling the people that, I got to work with Moses. A lot of people say, come on, what are you talking about, Moses? Who's Moses? I said, the Planet of the Apes, Charlton Heston, wonderful guy. You know what? He used to, in the afternoon at lunchtime, he was so skinny. At lunchtime, he used to run. He used to exercise at the ranch, at Fox Ranch in Malibu Canyon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what he did at the past time. Wow. Oh, the Planet of the Apes, oh my God. It took like 3 hour makeup.
Mm.
We had to report the location 3 a.m. Every 5 days a week. 3 a.m, cold, like, oh my God, it was crazy. You just sit in a makeup chair and they put all the stuff on your face. My makeup was like 9 different pieces, prosthetic, they call it, prosthesis, I don't know what they call it. But anyway, they put that stuff on your face, they glue it with spirit gum, and then, those days, that's what they used. And then to take it off, they used acetone.
Ouch.
And it was terrible, burning, my face was like, oh my God. Mm. And then you have to do the next day again. So you get ready like at 3 a.m. By 6 o'clock, 6:30, you go ready to shoot. 7 o'clock says, "Okay, let's start filming." And then all of a sudden, it started raining, and the director said, "Okay, take it off and go home. Come back tomorrow." Oh my God!
Oh.
You went through 3 hours of agony, you know, to put it on.
Yeah.
And then they said, "Take it off. Come back tomorrow." Oh my God! But it, okay. That was the Planet of the Apes. Now I want to tell you a story about, I don't know, Bonanza?
Yeah, I want to hear. Because you know what? Wait a minute. I looked today again. I was on YouTube because I wanted to see. I wanted to see you as a leprechaun, and I wanted to see if they had anything. And so I actually did see a clip where you were up a tree with Michael Landon and Dan Blocker beneath. And that I've got to watch that rerun, the whole show, because that looked really funny.
You know what? That TV show was the best and the highest rating they had for Bonanza.
Mm-hmm.
So, as a matter of fact, the writer he put in another sequel to the show. Right? He wanted to do a sequel to it, and Dan Blocker and Mike Landon, they love it. They say, "Oh yeah, it's a great idea." Lon Green and Pernell Roberts said, No, we don't want to because they take away too much from us. In other words, I mean, 25 years, but it wasn't what, 25 years?
Yes.
And we're going to take it away from them. That wasn't true. So they didn't do the sequel to it. But everybody, that show never misses. It comes before or after St. Patrick. Every year, it never missed.
Yes.
It's the funniest movies, the funniest TV show. It's funny. So, and then I did a movie with George Segal called The Blackbird. It was a remake, of The Maltese Falcon, in which she didn't really do anything for me because they released with the next rated film.
Mm.
So it didn't really do much for me, but it was wonderful. I had a lot of dialogue. I was the guy looking for the falcon, and they had a diamond, you know, this bird, they had a diamond inside, and I was the one looking for the, you know, I played the part of Sidney, Green Street, whatever his name is.
Yeah, Green Street.
Yeah, I played his part. As a matter of fact, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No,
what was
I didn't.
That?
I was clearing my throat, sorry. Keep going.
Yeah, and we used the secretary, the original secretary from the Humphrey Bogart movie.
Uh-huh.
You know, she was 20 years old when she did that one, and then when she worked in that movie, she was 80.
Oh,
they used the same secretary. Yeah.
So they were 40 years apart, the Maltese Falcon and
the Blackbird. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, I didn't realize that they were that far apart.
It was.
I've got a question. It came to me when you were talking about the Addams Family.
Yeah.
So, you know, I know you have a ton of stories about them, but Thing was not an original character either.
And, I don't think so. Yeah, you're right. Right. Yeah.
So, all right, and people may not know or know that Ted Cassidy, who played Lurch, the butler, was also...
Wait, don't say that. But please, what? Don't.
No.
What I want is a trivia.
Okay.
I want to ask the people, does anybody know who played Thing, the hand?
Okay,
a lot of
right.
people say, yeah, a lot of people say yes, a lot of people say no. He, a lot of people say, well, it's Ted Cassidy, but he played on the Thing 90% of the time when he was not involved in a scene. So when it wasn't a scene, then we had an assistant director did the Thing. But all Ted Cassidy was the man that they played. You know, I keep telling the people, it's not my hand. I mean, look at my hand between my size and his size. You know, not me. So everybody said, yeah, I think it's Ted. The other guy, a lot of people didn't know, and you tell them. But anyway, anything else on Adam's family?
I want to know about the thing. I want to know about the thing, all right? Because we know that Ted Cassidy was very tall. You know,
yes.
He was a big guy. And Thing's hand popped out of a box, and it looked like it was always from a side table or something. So here's my question. Since Ted was a very tall and lanky man, did they actually make him crawl under the table, the small table, to pop his hand out of the prop box? Or did they make it more comfortable maybe and shoot things with Thing differently so Ted wouldn't have to, like, crawl under a table?
You know what? I think Ted was sitting on the floor, on some kind of cushion on the floor.
Okay.
On the back of the table because they couldn't see him.
Yeah.
And the hand, yeah. Yeah.
Because he was so big, I can just imagine him crouching under the table.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he just sat there and put his hand up there. He was so wonderful. I mean, when he played
harpsichord.
Harpsichord. Oh my God, he was so good in that. He was so good. Yeah.
And then
when people used to come in and grab the hat, you rang or whatever. It was funny.
Yeah. The mail. Yeah, or the mail.
Yeah, the mail's in. Wow.
All right. So let me Bruce Tango is in the chat room, and you guys
I know
you're close, and he loves you like a brother. And you'll be seeing him at Legends Fest in a month. And because you're one of the celebrities that's going to be attending the event, you'll be like signing autographs and taking pictures with the people who come and also mingling with the crowd there. And as you know, there's going to be a costume contest during the day that's going to be judged by Boris Karloff's daughter, Sarah.
Sarah, yeah.
And Ron Chaney's grandson, the Wolfman's grandson, Lon Chaney's grandson.
Yeah.
And there's going to be a nice cash prize too for the best costume depicting the iconic Universal monsters. But wouldn't it be funny, now that I'm going to mention it, maybe somebody will do this, wouldn't it be funny if somebody came in dressed up like Cousin It?
You never know. Somebody might be showing up like that, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you know what I do when a lot of people come to my table and then I have long hair?
Mm-hmm.
I make them put their hair in front of her face, you know, and I put my sunglasses on them, and it looks like a Cousin It, and they have a picture taken together. But you never know, somebody might be coming in, but you know what, I'm glad we came up and talked about the legend of Fast, because we have to say something about the show, because I know, Bruce is waiting. He probably is going to ask me a question or whatever, but we need to talk a little bit about that thing. You know, that's the most important thing. That's the reason we're doing this. Okay, so.
Well, partly, but yeah, people wanted to hear you and whatever. But yeah, I mean, you're flying in from Vegas. Allison Arngrim, who is Nellie Olson on House of the Prairie, is flying all the way from L.A., and there's tons of entertainers going to be there. I mean, the daytime party is going to be fun with the costume party and the vendors and all that stuff going on there. But the nighttime party with all the entertainment is going to be spectacular.
I think it's going to be great because Bruce, he's well known for putting things up there and do. I've been in one of his venue, one of the things that he put together many years ago. He got in touch with me, and he said something about the Tourette syndrome. And you know what? I never heard that thing before. I didn't know what it was. So when I got to New Jersey, he told me about his son, Dave. You know, Dave has Tourette syndrome. And I can't figure out. I said, what is this? I mean, what is Tourette syndrome? I never heard the word. I never heard anything about it. That's why, I think that's why Bruce is doing these things to stamp out this miserable, whatever they call Tourette syndrome or whatever. But I met Dave. Dave is a wonderful guy, like his father. And I know Bruce, he knows how to put up for doing things. You know? Also, he's good taking to a nice Italian restaurant to make you heavy and fat. You know, he loves to take you to a Italian restaurant. Bruce is my best friend, and I'm so glad to see him again. I'm happy to be there, and I want to see Sarah Karloff. I've done a couple conventions with her. Mm-hmm. I see her once in a while here and there. So I you know what, I'm happy to see Bruce. So if he's over there listening, hey, Bruce, we'll see you soon, isn't it? So
that's for sure. For people who are interested, the show, the event is September 28th. It's a Saturday night. And Bruce Tango now has a website, in case people didn't know that. And if you go to brucetango.com and you click on the Legends Fest icon, it outlines everybody that's going to be there, what everybody's going to be doing, daytime, nighttime, the after party. There's also an after party where you're going to mingle with all the celebrities. I mean, it's really going to be a lot of fun. And so go to brucetango.com in the Legends Fest tab, and it'll tell you how to buy tickets and all that good stuff. Right?
Yeah, the tickets, you know, the tickets are running out, so you guys better, better hurry and buy some, because if you blink, you're going to miss it. It's going to go, they go fast, so buy it, buy the ticket, and we'd love to see you there, yeah.
Exactly, people will love to see you there, for sure. And, you know, I just found out that you have a book out called The World of Felix Silla.
Yes, Also, I have a Funko Pop, Adam's cousinette Funko Pop. It just came out a couple of months ago.
What's that?
You know, there's little figures like it's in the box.
Yeah.
It's called Funko. Oh. You've probably seen it.
I probably haven't. I'm out of the loop, but I'm going to go look it up right now.
Oh, you got to go look at it, man. Yeah, they're so... I mean, a lot of people love them. You know, I bought a bunch of them, and I just sell them on my table. I don't know if I'll bring some at the New Jersey thing, but, you know, a lot of the dealers, they do have them. So what the fans do, they buy from them, and then I sign them.
Oh, great idea.
So, you know, I don't have to travel too many. Because if you put them in an airplane, in a box in the airplane, they crush them. And the luggage, you got to have a big luggage, you know, so I want to travel light, you know, I don't want to travel, and they're opening luggage anyway, these crazy people. So anyway, you talk about the book, I do have a book, it's available someplace. I don't have it on my website.
Oh, well.
I have one, yeah.
Yeah, because, well, if you do, let us know, and we'll talk about that, because that would be really interesting.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things, I think people, you know, sometimes they know you as a character, and they don't really know the man behind the character. And the stories, like tonight, everybody in the chat room is really loving the stories, because it's you know, behind the scenes stuff, and it's really interesting and it's really fun. So I imagine the book is just loaded with them.
Yes, the book has a lot of photos, a lot of pictures in it. With people that I worked with, the people that I've done conventions with it. You know, there's a lot of nice things in there, and the people that they just choose to buy an autographed photo instead of buy a book. I mean, you know, the book is almost the same price. You get so much stuff for one thing, and, you know, you could buy the book and get all the photos that I have on my table, you know, in one book. But Yeah, I do. It's available. And I don't know. Did I forget to say anything else? Any other shows? I mean, I work with Red Skelton, too. Now, I do a lot of nice things with Red Skelton. And he was a nice guy, too. Very fun.
Like a very gentleman, huh?
Oh, my God. He was so funny. You know the way it worked? Every day, when we had Vincent Price on the show, mm-hmm. everybody from CBS studio, wasn't La Brea, was this La Brea, right? Or the street?
Fairfax.
They used to come, all the secretary, everybody from CBS studio, they used to come to see the rehearsal Vincent Price was on the show, because the rehearsal got very, very kind of dirty, like a lot of dirty jokes and whatever. And then when we had Roy Rogers and Dale Evans on the rehearsal, everything got very nice and clean, because there's religious people. You know, they went from nice and clean to nice and dirty. It is funny. Red Skelton was a gentleman. He never, you know what? He used to have this big cigar. He never lit up the cigar. He used to chew on it. You know, he used to chew on a cigar, walked everywhere, and the secretary used to follow him. And he used to dictate all the jokes that he wanted, you know, and she used to, what's that, stenographer, they call him? Mm-hmm. She used to print or whatever. Yeah. And she used to follow him everywhere like a little dog, and he used to chew on his cigar and just walk around and dictate all the jokes. And it was a great. I really loved to work with him. He was a very, very nice guy to work with.
Yes,
also, I worked with Jonathan Winter too.
Yeah,
and I worked with all of them. I worked with the Grindo. I worked with Paul Lind, and I worked with, oh my God.
Well, you know what we're going to do. You know what we're going to do, because this hour goes by really too short. I want you to come back, and let's tell some more stories.
Yeah, I think we could do it.
Okay, we'll talk about that. And in the meantime, though, I want to thank you for joining me tonight. And it was really a pleasure having you here. And so I'll keep you on your word about coming back. And I want to thank everybody for listening in, too. And don't forget that you can find this and nearly 100 Stirring the Cauldron shows, both live and archived, on my YouTube channel, which is Stirring the Cauldron Para X. So please subscribe, and I think they'll alert you when new shows are up. And hang on for a minute, Felix, when we go off, and I'll thank you properly. And until next time, everybody, blessed be, and merry meet again. Good night.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks. Please join us again next week at the same time for another great guest and more cauldron stirring. Any rebroadcast or other use of this program without explicit permission is strictly prohibited. Copyright 2019. The Mysterioso March by Kevin MacLeod is licensed through Incompotech.com.